This is Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Courtney Donahoe. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
It doesn't come easy. No, successful investing, it's a lot of work. And here to help guide us, we have Andrew Lowe. Andrew Lowe is the Charles E. and Susan T. Harris Professor of Finance at the MIT Sloan School of Management. He is also the director of MIT's Laboratory for Financial Engineering, and he is the author of such books as Dynamics of the Hedge Fund Industry and Hedge Funds, An Analytic Perspective. Andrew Lowe, good to have you with us here on Bloomberg. Thanks for coming in. Buy and hold. I would bet if you went around and did a poll, that's one of the consistent themes that many, perhaps even non-professionals and professionals, would say, yes, buy and hold is the way to make wealth. You say that's not true.
Well, not anymore. I think that in this time where volatility is more of a roller coaster ride than a steady heartbeat, we've got real problems with buy and hold because any moment you could be shocked by, you know, having huge risk in your portfolio.
But isn't that the point, though, Andrew? You ride that out, volatility comes back to where it was, and that turned out to have been just a blip.
Well, you know, that's true if volatility goes up or down by a few percentage points. Yes, you can ride that out. But when it hits like a tsunami, very often people will actually cash out and go into bonds or cash at the worst possible moment. So I think we have to recognize the behavioral reality that when you have extreme movements in risk, people basically don't behave the way that they should. So we ought to recognize that in advance and try to take that into account.
You talk about behavioral issues. This is also having to do with emotion and the way that the human brain is wired to deal with the kinds of shocks that you describe.
Yeah, that's right. Human psychology hasn't changed in several thousand years. And so we have to recognize that while financial markets is a very quantitative pursuit and we have lots of mathematical models to help us, the fact is that most people decide based upon their heart, not their heads.
All right. Well, if you decide on your heart rather than your head, maybe you should turn it over to someone else's head in order to manage your money. Or is that not a great idea?
No, I think that is. I think that it helps very often to talk through your decisions with family members, friends, and then if you can afford it, financial advisors provide a tremendous amount of benefit in terms of their expertise.
What's so different about now, though, Andrew? I mean, we've had financial crises going back decades and centuries, and, you know, there's always something geopolitical going on. We don't even know how big this Korea situation is going to get.
Well, you're right. You know, we always think that the time we're living in is special times, and very often it's not. It's pretty much the same as it always has been. But there is a big difference in the time we're living in now, and that really has to do with the financial crisis. You know, 2007 and 2008 was really unprecedented in all of our lifetimes. You've got to go back to 1929 to really get the same kind of economic dislocation that we've seen today. And it's really that dislocation that we're still dealing with. The ripple effects
are
still going on.
But if you had bought stock before 1929 and had managed to ride out the Great Depression, wouldn't it be worth a lot more now?
Well, if you could have waited about 10 years, yes, absolutely. But the problem is that waiting those 10 years is pretty scary. And you didn't know in advance it was going to be 10 years. It could have been 5. It could have been 15. So the key is, how long do we have to wait things out? Most investors are really not able to be that patient.
Do most investors live a life according to the calendar year? Because we look at returns on an annual basis, and yet when you speak to individuals or even those that have to be responsible for pension funds and insurance portfolios, you're dealing with events that are beyond everyone's control. They're not necessarily organized along the calendar year.
You're absolutely right. But the fact is that we basically measure investment returns year to year. And actually, I think there's another marker that we have to keep in mind, which is that for the first time last year, the generation of baby boomers began to retire. So now when you're retiring, you're on a fixed time clock. You're thinking, well, geez, you know, I really have to worry about my investment returns. I want to manage my risk. And, you know, nowadays, because bond yields are so low, we can't even have the safety of putting our money in bonds and being able to live off of the income for the next few years.
And doesn't that create its own behavioral biases so that you know that you're going to have to retire? Your concerns are different as you look to retirement as opposed to maybe your younger adult years.
Exactly right. I mean, typically when people retire, they think about taking a good chunk of their money out from the stock market and putting it into bonds and living off the interest. Well, think about doing that today where the interest rate is pretty much close to zero. So I think that we're in a very unusual time period where even when you retire and you want to cash out and put your money in something safe, you can't really do that and live off of that income.
Are there ways to train your brain that would make you a better investor?
Absolutely. And not surprisingly, it's like anything else. Practice makes perfect. You've got to think about all the various scenarios that you might be subjected to, all of the market's ups and downs, and ask yourself in each one of those scenarios, can you tolerate that? Can you wait it out? Or are you really going to freak out? It's that freak out factor that you have to plan for and think carefully about how much investment returns you can afford to lose before you're going to cash out in a panic sell and ultimately hurt your investment returns permanently.
You don't always have to be in the market to freak out, though, right? I mean, it can freak you out being out of the market and watch it go up as well.
That's exactly right. But that kind of freak out tends to be somewhat less less manic than when you're actually in the market and you're losing money. In other words, regret and disappointment are probably not as potent a factor as downright fear when you're seeing your investment wealth get frittered away by these market crashes.
We're speaking with Andrew Lowe. He is a professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management. He is also a leading authority on hedge funds and financial engineering. He's the director of MIT's Laboratory for Financial Engineering, also the author of such books as A Non-Random Walk Down Wall Street. Professor Lowe, A Random Walk Down Wall Street was a book by Burton Malkiel that seemed to convince a lot of people that there was nothing an individual could do, whether it was the application of technology or just street smarts, to beat the market. Is that still true?
Well, I think it's true that it's pretty hard for the individual investor to beat the market. But what's not true is that you can't do anything about the kind of crazy risks that we have. In other words, I think that individual investors might not focus as much on beating the market as protecting themselves from the gyrations that we've seen over the course of the last 5 years.
Is that speaking to the issue of not losing as much as the market in downtimes, and therefore being able to at least keep pace with the market when the market moves higher, whether it be for bonds or stocks or commodities?
Exactly. And there are two important things to do in order to make sure that we're able to achieve that goal. One is make sure that you're not in cash for too long after a crisis hits. You want to get back into the market sooner rather than later, not wait until after the market's already recovered. And the second is you want to be careful not to pull out everything all at once without understanding the implications of that kind of liquidation. We see that with crisis periods, when you try to liquidate everything, when everybody rushes out the exit, you end up losing a lot of wealth in that process.
Andrew, should the regular average amateur investor stay away from currency investing?
Well, yeah, I think that currency investing is very dangerous unless the investor is really willing to spend time understanding what kind of unique risks currency funds and currency strategies pose. But for investors that really have the time and have the expertise, it could be quite an exciting investment vehicle. The problem is that it really does take a certain set of skills to be able to manage that.
Professor Lowe, you received your bachelor's degree in economics from Yale University, your PhD in economics from Harvard. Do you remember getting the acceptance into Yale?
Absolutely. That was a thrilling day and one that I'll remember for the rest of my life.
All right. So you get accepted into Yale. The reason I asked this is because did you think that the people you were going to encounter at Yale knew more than you did?
Well, you know, I didn't know what to expect. Actually, being a high school student here in New York at the Bronx High School of Science, one of the best high schools in the world, I thought that being smart was being good at math and physics. And what I found at Yale was that there are tons of smart people that are completely innumerate, but they have incredible wisdom and insights into all sorts of other aspects of life that I didn't. And I really enjoyed my time there and learned a great deal from my classmates.
Does that highlight a challenge that all investors face, that there are other people out there who may be smarter than you are?
Absolutely. I think that's something that we have to keep in mind. It's that we're not the only ones thinking these things about markets, and we're not the only ones that have money to be invested. So when you start thinking about the competition out there, that's really why Burton Malkiel's advice is actually pretty good advice for typical retail investors. It's to focus on investing in the long run and focus on low-fee investments and to try to manage your risks as carefully as possible.
Andrew, is it a good thing that we have so many ETFs now, or that ETFs even exist? And I'm thinking of things like, you know, commodities ETFs in particular.
Well, you know, I think it's a good thing that ETFs exist. However, I think you point a very important concern, which is that if there are too many ETFs, particularly these very complicated ETFs, of which, you know, double leveraged inverse ETFs and some of the commodity ETFs may be examples, then investors start getting lured into these exciting vehicles without really understanding what kind of risks they're taking. And I think that's the danger for any kind of innovation. We tend to overdo it. And while ETFs provide, you know, certain benefits to investors, liquidity and transparency, at the same time, the proliferation of lots of these really complex ETFs could actually create some problems.
And those backed by hard assets would absolutely affect prices too.
Yeah, they certainly would. And I think that's one of the things that we have to understand is how the underlyings can actually affect the interesting price dynamics of these ETFs.
You're a recipient of many awards, included among them the Graham and Dodd Award. They were, of course, the pioneers in value investing. When you hear that stocks move up or down, when there are buyers and sellers, and then there next is a paragraph that explains because, do you question that? Is there a real link between, let's say, the real economy and why a particular stock might move higher or lower?
Well, absolutely, you have to question that. I take all of those kinds of statements with a grain of salt. And, you know, this is one of the things that investors don't always understand. It's that when newspapers describe these kinds of motivations, these are really conjectures. We don't know for a fact that that's why stocks went up or down. There's lots of noise in the system, and it's a really complex system. It's unlike physical systems where, you know, you hit a hammer, use a hammer, hit a nail, the nail goes into the piece of the wood, you understand exactly what's going on. We almost never have that kind of level of transparency with economics circumstances. So I think that when investors read about these explanations, they really do need to take that with a grain of salt.
Why do investors seemingly have no aversion to buying stocks or any financial asset at a retail price when they always look for sales in their own life?
That's a great question, and this goes to investor psychology. You know, when investors buy stocks, what they're buying is not a commoditized asset. They're buying a story. They're buying hopes, dreams, vision. And would you want a discount on your vision? You know, I think that it's something that really goes to the heart of what something is worth. In fact, when prices go up, that could actually make you more eager to buy because it confirms the fact that you think there's something of value. Other people recognize it too, and you want to jump on that bandwagon before it's too late.
Are there some specific sort of practices or some specific physical exercises that individuals can do to think more clearly about investing? I mean, it could be something like literally taking a walk outside or moving away from a particular area where there's a herd mentality.
Sure. I think there are a few things that investors can do, one of which is to spend time thinking about investments. You know, most of us probably spend, you know, 1 or 2 days out of the year, if we're lucky, thinking about investments. You typically focus on it at year end. Maybe you focus on it when you fill out your tax returns. But we have to think about our investments all the time in the same way that we have to think about our diets all the time. It used to be the case that you could eat to your heart's content. Now you've got to watch your carbs. You have to worry about your cholesterol and fiber and so on. I think we have to take that same approach with investments and think more carefully about what we're doing. And then when there's a big disaster, whether it's a financial crash or a family problem that arises, we've got to take time to let our brains calm down and process the emotional trauma before we start making financial decisions. This is where talking about it with friends and family can really help.
And do you get a lot of emails and telephone calls when those volatile times hit?
I do. And I do my best to answer as many as I can.
I want to thank you very much for joining us. Professor Andrew Lowe, he is the Charles E. Susan T. Harris Professor of Finance at the MIT Sloan School of Management. He's also the director of MIT's Laboratory for Financial Engineering. This is Taking Stock on Bloomberg. Send us an email, takingstock@bloomberg.net. All of the guests, all of the topics, all of the time. All right, set your schedules because we're expanding our radio programming schedule. Beginning Monday, April 8th, the Hayes Advantage will begin at 10 a.m. This is Taking Stock.
You can listen to Taking Stock weekday afternoons at 3 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013, Bloomberg LP.